Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.
53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cent. Fair amount of reaction to our friend Harry, who we were just talking to before the break there, who lives in Australia and has a cat who he feeds on a vegan diet. John wants, what's to stop the cat from going outside, puking up the vegan muck and horsing into a few nice birds and maybe a mouse or two? Well, as you heard, I did ask him that, and he says that the cat is indoors most of the time. Now, he brings the cat out on a little lead, it should be said, so the cat's kind of controlled, but he said he wouldn't have a problem if the cat went out and did that, because that's the normal course of events. Tony says, wait now, is a cat's favourite treat not a saucer of milk? Has he replaced this with coconut milk or so? I assume so. Cats are carnivores. They've evolved to be carnivores. His cat is going to die. He's a moron. This is another texter. Brian says, has the cat developed an annoying personality where it tells you it's a vegan instantly upon meeting? This chap is a clown. I don't think the cat has done that. The cat probably doesn't realise it's a vegan. How dare he impose veganism on the cat? He was babysitting. Did he ask permission? I'd love to slap him with a raw steak. And Robin Monahan says, looking forward to your future news piece where the cat eats the vegan guy in a revenge-fueled attack. That would be somewhat ironic, wouldn't it? So his beef, so to speak, is with the meat-based pet food industry. That's fine. The meat processing industry is often horrible. So in order to still fulfil her need for meat, why not just feed her roadkill? Says Brian, that would be sort of, work intensive. And Francis says, the cat is being held captive. He puts her on a leash when going outside so she can't run away from her vegan captor that forces her to eat food she doesn't need. We must free the cat. We should start a GoFundIt page. Oh my God, he's in trouble now. Raid Lavery's joining us this once again.
A catnap page.
A catnip. It's been catnipped. Boom, boom. So the heat wave is finished, but we still don't have any water.
No, it's amazing, isn't it? You look up at those big grey clouds and there's nothing falling out of them. Yes. I mean, I can't understand it at all. It's 9, 10, 11 weeks in some cases where
Crikey,
yeah, it's
long.
Unbelievable. It's we had nice May, we had nice June, it's just extraordinary. And so's being that over 25,000 farmers have contacted Chagask, their drought line, and for looking for support on what they have to do to try and stretch feed that just isn't growing. Grass isn't, well, it might begin to grow a little bit now, but it still needs moisture. And so 25,000 farmers have contacted it, as I said, about half their client base. It shows the pressure they're under. They've also set up a helpline for farmers, 087-797-1377. It's available from 9 to 9 every day. They've got over 140 calls in the first week on it, on the helplines, just people looking for support. There's clinics around the country. You can get them information for that from Chagask. They're holding them. They're being very well attended. And people are giving their experiences and, you know, they're getting help into how to monitor what's going on. Because it's not now, this week, next week. It's the consequences for next October, December, next March. All that is happening. The credit issues are mounting as well. And this is right across the board. Farmers are buying in a lot of meal to supplement their feed. In some cases, the demand is up 75% on the same period last year. We're talking about bills here for the bigger operators of 40 to 50,000, money that they would never have budgeted to have to spend on meal at this time of the year. There's only one ray of light, would you believe it, on it. Well, there's a ray of light for people who are farming heavy wet ground. And there's lots of parts of the country like that, and they're growing grass still. It suits the kind of weather or this kind of ground that they have. But it's a mini boom for people who have rushes on their farm. As I've said before, people who find a use for rushes, good luck to them. The only thing we ever made with rushes were Bridget Crosses, St. Bridget Crosses.
Yes.
But because the straw crop isn't looking that healthy, it's certainly not in the volume that it would usually be. Straw is expected to be very expensive later in the year. And if you've animals in, particularly ones that are not on slats, who are on, you know, concrete or on gravel or whatever like that, they're straw bedded on the whole. And, straw looks as if it's going to be very expensive. But basically, rush prices. Now, I didn't realise there were farmers who actually produce rushes, but you know, they're just a byproduct of wet land. But their bales have gone up from 8 to 15 euro at the moment, particularly bales that have maybe grass grown through it that have turned to hay. Mm. So you're getting maybe some feed as well as you're getting the bedding. So from 8 to 15 euro, like, that is really good. Straw at the moment is about 30 euro a bale, and it's going to, you know, probably get more expensive across the winter. So, you know, get those rushes down and get them baled up, because they're valuable at the moment at 15 euro a bale.
Okay, and can it be, well, obviously the rushes aren't as good.
Well, but remember, our ancestors would have slept on rushes. Mm. They would have walked on rushes. I mean, rushes would have been what covered the ground. You know, they were filled into the mattresses or, you know, and that's what we slept on because, you know, dried out, there's nothing wrong with them. Mm. But they're no feed value or anything like that. But certainly when it comes to having expensive straw, you know, you're as well off having rushes there, and especially if you can get them handy. And, you know, from an environmental point of view, they're probably local to you, and rather than importing straw from a good distance away.
Isn't it something people perhaps should be using anyway for
No, but you'd never have the year to get in on the rushy ground.
Yeah, it wouldn't be dry enough for straw.
Exactly. There's always a reason. Yeah. And you wouldn't get in. Like some of the you know, the farmers who are farming on land that would be heavy and wet, well, they're saying, OK, we can now cut a field where we could only have two paddocks, we can now have four. Mm. So why can you have four? Why does that matter? Around one truck of water. So the truck is there. It's kind of can be accessed by animals on each one of the four paddocks. But before, you would have only been able to have two paddocks because the ground would all get mushed up into a porridge around it in wet country, even in summertime. So they would have always only been able to use two paddocks instead of four. Now they can really utilise every scrap of grass on those four paddocks by even not having to move the water truck, because the ground isn't getting all messed up around it, or because animals aren't standing and destroying the grass. They're eating every pick of it. So from the guys and girls who are farming in wetland, you know, it's been a boom of a year.
Yes.
But for the people on dry, sandy land, it's been an absolute, like, it's even worse in the winter for a totally different reason, because they're having to feed all this extra food.
There have been cases of machinery going on fire.
Yeah, seemingly. And it's sometimes, you know, you think of, you know, machinery that's working. There's metal parts rubbing off metal parts. And everything is so bone dry now that a single spark can actually set things alight.
Hmm.
And there's been stories of fields actually combusting, like literally going up. They're that tinder dry. So farmers now, particularly who are doing the harvest, they're putting out big tankers of water in fields just in case anything happens, and that they need to get water, access to water, really, really fast.
Yeah, that's if they can get their hands on
but
the
just
water.
But you know, it's Farm Safety Week this week. And you know, with the fodder crisis at the moment, and I know that sounds, well, the drought, just to be careful. Kids are out and about an awful lot more on farms. You know, the school holidays kicked in there 2 weeks ago. And, you know, kids who are not used to being on the farm, they mightn't see the danger. Like, you know, daddy or mammy would be shouting at the others, stay away from there, don't go near that place, you know, don't do this, don't do the other thing. But youngsters, cousins who've come in, or neighbours, children who've come in, it's all a great place to explore a farm. But it's a very dangerous place as well. And so to kind of keep them right. Also, big bales, people are opening big bales of silage. They usually would be, you know, there's a different way of doing it in the wintertime, taking off all the plastic. But just to be watching it now, especially don't be standing under the bales when you're cutting them open, because they weigh about a ton and you're not going to get away from it if anything happens. Also, farmers are feeding cattle out or cows out. A herd of 50 or 60 cows running towards you when they hear a couple of buckets or they hear the tractor coming. Not a good place to be on the ground facing them. So you need to have them in a different paddock. You need them out, you know, in a different paddock. Then you can put the food out or the meal out, and then let them into it. Controlled access. But do not kind of just go in with a bag on your back and sprinkle the stuff and have them coming at you. I mean, they don't know when to stop, and you mightn't be fast enough. I think it's 13 deaths. It could actually be 15 so far this year. And the majority of those people have been over 60. They still think they're 40. They're not.
Yeah,
they're not moving as fast as they should be. So just to be very, very careful with things like that. Machinery that you didn't expect to be running at this time of the year, you know, the diet feeder or whatever it is, has it been serviced? just to be very careful with all sorts of machinery, especially now that this is Farm Safety Week. We, you know, the record on farm safety, considering the numbers that are employed on farms, it's not good. You know, we lose a lot of people every year. The consequences are dramatic for families, and for neighbours and for friends. So just be really, really conscious of being safe on the place as well this time of the year.
Just going back to the water situation, someone says in to say, I'm out spreading water until 1:30 every night, bar four over the last 31 days, trying to keep the grass growing for milkers. We aren't overstocked either. This situation is madness. God, it is. And one imagines that person, and probably lots of other farmers, won't be able to, the water supply won't
hold
up.
Well, you see, what they're saying is the deficit, the soil moisture deficit is such that even spreading now, you know, at least you feel you're doing something. It's like being stuck in traffic. Like if you could move at all, at least you're moving. So, but putting out water at night. Now, some people say it's not worth doing because the soil deficit is so much. And even if you were to put out tankers of water, you know, you're only going down, you know, 10 millimetres and you need to be going down about 90 millimetres to be actually able to make any impact. But at least people feel they're doing something. But saying that, a lot of streams have run dry where, you know, people might have sourced water from. An awful lot of farms have, my son was laughing about this last night. He was trying to explain to a couple of young city guys that, yes, you know, you have a pump out in a field and the pump pumps water up from the ground and then you pipe it up to the house and up to the yard and you pay the bills and all associated with it. And somebody said, like, third world, you know, like, that's what you do there. But in actual fact, for the vast majority of farmers, that's what they have to do. It is, they have their own pump. But depending on how far down the well went or when they hit water, did they go below the water by a metre or two or three or ten? How much further? Like, if they just basically, when they hit water, said, that's it, we're not going to bore any further, we've got water. So again, in those circumstances, we know of farmers whose wells have literally run dry, and it's very expensive to bore another one to get down to the lower water table.
Gosh!
So it's you know, it's like an absolute, the exact opposite of 6 months ago.
Yes,
it's the exact opposite, and it's equally as damaging, if not more so, at the moment, because this whole idea that we got the window in May and June to work ahead to replenish the stocks from last winter. Now we're actually eating into the stuff that's already been started for last winter. There's nothing growing. So I don't know what the story, the outcome, you know, people, what they're thinking about now, but they're thinking ahead next month, the month after, September, October, November. What has to be done to get us through those months as well?
Because all our farming is based on it's predicated on the idea we have a temperate climate, and we don't anymore.
Well, that's it. We our big USP, unique selling point, has been we're grass based. Our livestock are outdoors. You get used, like, you know, I was away for last week. I didn't see an animal out in any field where I was.
Yeah.
We take it utterly for granted that, you know, you count the cows in that field and there's pink one or brown ones and this one and white ones. Like we used to, when the kids were in the back of the car, you know, we kept them really quiet by getting them to watch out the window on either side. And there was points for a herd of cows, or there was, like, you got 5 points for a herd of cows. If you saw a herd of sheep or a flock of sheep, you got 10 points. If you saw a donkey, you got 100 points. If you saw a goat, you got 200 points. And I mean, it was, try it. It's a great game, because Dad would have to keep an eye on that side and I'd be on the other side, and you'd be watching everything. And, you know, there was no fighting. There was no, are we there yet? You know, so just, but I mean, we take for granted that the livestock are out and about, but not necessarily so.
Now, another thing that can be found very occasionally on a farm are historical artefacts.
Well, yes, and we certainly found them here this week, or in the last 2 weeks. My colleague in the journal, Anthony Murphy, was a co-citer or co-discoverer of this major henge. Again, which was...
Now, what's a henge? It's like a big
Big, it's like an enclosure, like, you know, stone henge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this... Now, we wouldn't probably have had stones. It would have been more timber uprights. But seemingly, I was talking to Anthony just before I came over today. You know, he's an amateur historian, and He's always been like checking that area for new discoveries, and he reckoned that the combination of this dry weather. So what happened was basically, you know, you could send a drone over this piece of ground for the last 30 years or the last 100 years and you wouldn't have spotted a thing.
Mm.
But because there were posts in the ground, the water, moisture has kind of, you know, moved to those places, which meant that the grain that was growing up is little healthier looking than the grain where those posts weren't in the ground. So it's to do with actually the water level being there, making the grain healthier and providing this image that is absolutely perfect.
Oh, wow.
So, you know,
that's weird.
It's weird. Yeah. And I mean, Anthony said any other time he could have got the drone out. He could have looked at it for like 365 days a year for the last 10 years would never have appeared. It's just the drought conditions are such that there's more because of the material that would have been in the henge and the way the henge was situated around, that the moisture levels were slightly better there than in the rest of the field.
Mm.
And what you're actually seeing is the health of the grain that grew, and the grain is telling the story. It's like kind of a Harry Potter thing, really.
Mm.
You know, the grain is actually betraying the secret of the ground underneath it.
That's quite fascinating.
But there's about 120,000 of these of monuments on farm, mostly on farmland.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the past, maybe we weren't that good at mining it. We're an awful lot better now. So find out about whatever is on your farm. Tell the story of it and mine it.
Murray, thanks a million for coming into us. Murray Lavery there from the Farmer's Journal. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.